Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Global warming is a serious problem worldwide. One reason for this environmental issue is our use of fossil fuels for transportation, which are responsible for a fifth of our carbon emissions. Cars that use gas pollute the air and harm our health. I go to school on my bicycle every day, and it's a great option for me, especially because Davis is a small and flat city. But there are times when someone may have a longer commute or not enough time to get between places. Enter the e-bike, an affordable, portable, effective, and environmental friendly transportation option for longer or more difficult commutes. It's a bicycle that has an electric motor that you can activate to help with or to replace pedaling. Depending on the kind of e-bike you own, you can go 20 to 100 miles on a single charge. The latest e-bikes charge fast when you plug in the battery, and they keep charging when you pedal. Their pedal assist feature lets you pick the amount of help you need from the bike motor so that you can get a good workout if you like, even after using the throttle. In California, e-bikes are classified as conventional bicycles, and you can use them if you are 16 years of age or older. You don't need a license to ride them, and they don't need to be registered. If you don't use your car, you can reduce greenhouse gas emissions, decrease your carbon footprint, and do your part to help fight climate change. There are millions of e-bikes on our roads these days. You may think that they're a recent invention, but they actually date back about 125 years ago. The first battery-powered bicycle was invented in 1895 by Ogden Bolton Jr. in the United States. Our guest on today's episode of Time Out Radio is Dr. Susan Handy, who tells us about the environmental policy challenges that the road to sustainable transportation faces in the United States. With its 320 miles of bicycle lanes, our place of the week is the city of Amsterdam, which is widely considered to be the bicycle capital of the world. Up next is Yesterday by Tiesto. Take me back to yesterday. We sing da-di-da-da-di-dum-da-di-day. Dancing every night away. Ooh, I miss the rush. And I don't wanna feel the loneliness no more. Remember when we used to say, daddy, 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 day. Take me back to yesterday. We'd sing, daddy, 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 day. Dancing every night away. We sing. Welcome back to Time Out Radio on KDRT 95.7 FM in Davis, California. This is your host, Rohan Bakshi. Our guest on today's episode is Dr. Susan Handy, who is a professor in the Department of Environmental Science and Policy at UC Davis and the director of the National Center for Sustainable Transportation. So, Dr. Handy, first off, thank you so much for taking the time and joining me on Time Out Radio today. First off, the website of the UC Davis Institute of Transportation Studies talks about the many environmental challenges that our world faces around population growth, habitat degradation and extinctions, climate change, pollution, and resource depletion. And in an effort to address these issues, your department brings together the natural sciences and social sciences to develop solutions. So what are some of the areas, specifically in the area of sustainable transportation, that you and your colleagues are working on?
Yeah, it's a big issue. Transportation is one of the biggest sources of greenhouse gas emissions in California and in many parts of the world. And of course, most of that has to do with privately owned passenger vehicles. So much of our work is focused on one hand, reducing emissions from those vehicles, and in particular, the transition to electric vehicles. And then on the other hand, a lot of our work is also about how do we reduce dependence on cars? In other words, how do we make it possible for people to get around by modes other than cars?
Yeah, and transportation is at the center of many of our environmentalist challenges. It accounts for over 60% of global oil consumption, a quarter of all energy use, and about one-third of the world's energy-related carbon dioxide emissions. And to set the stage for the rest of our conversation today, give us a quick overview of the environmental policy challenges that the road to sustainable transportation faces in the United States.
There are many, many, many challenges. Well, especially in California, we are making some progress in terms of policy. The state of California is transitioning to electric vehicles. By 2030, all new cars sold in California need to be electric. That's a huge step, and it's a world-leading effort to push this transition to electric vehicles. But on the other hand, there are a lot of things we need to be doing that are hard to do politically. And that's especially true on the side of reducing how much people are driving. So that's not an easy thing to do, obviously, especially in a place like California where people drive so much and most people feel like they really don't have much choice but to drive. So we need to be providing alternatives, which means investing in transit. And it means building bicycle and pedestrian infrastructure. Transit faces a huge challenge right now. Financially, they were very hard hit, the transit agencies, by COVID, when people stayed home from work and people were not using transit. And ridership has been coming back, but is still not up to what it was before COVID. There was a lot of financial help during COVID from the federal government. But that money is running out. And so we talk about the transit agencies being at the edge of the fiscal cliff. Agencies like BART in particular, you know, just this week, lots in the news about how they're really, really at the edge. And unless the state decides to put more money into transit, the transit agencies throughout the state are going to have to start cutting back their service. The other challenge is we know that getting people to drive less not only requires providing good alternatives for them, but it also means making driving both more expensive and less convenient. And that means pricing. So we do a little bit of this, like the tolls on the bridges in the Bay Area, and they have gone up over time. The tolls are higher at peak hours than they are at off-peak hours. But clearly what we need to do if we're going to push people to do something other than drive is toll our roads more generally. So pricing is really important. It's just been politically not viable.
Yeah, for sure. And let's talk a little about, you know, the COVID-19 pandemic. That certainly changed things drastically in pretty much all aspects of our life. So how did, you know, the pandemic change the way specifically people get around?
Well, there was the immediate COVID effect, and then there have been the lasting effects, right? So when COVID hit, a huge share of the workforce was told to stay home. That took all kinds of cars off of the road, and we saw congestion went away, and it was easy to get around if you were, in fact, trying to get somewhere and get out of your house. Transit ridership plummeted, except that transit was critical for, the essential workers like hospital workers and others who had to be working to keep us going during COVID. People started walking and biking because it was a way to get out of the house and a way to get some exercise. So that was a more positive trend that we saw. There was a huge surge in the purchase of bicycles and especially electric assist bicycles, otherwise known as e-bikes. A lot of that was recreational, but it sort of opens the door to people using bicycles as a mode of transportation. Of course, another big change was remote work. So there was a lot of that going on immediately with the COVID shutdowns. But of course, a lot of that has persisted. There are a lot of office workers who are not yet back to commuting to the office 5 days a week. So that's in some ways helped with the driving and the traffic problem, except not as much as you might think because people are driving for reasons other than getting to work. So we're just about back to, if not beyond, where we were in terms of the amount of driving on our highways as we were before COVID. And then I guess the last thing I would mention is the online shopping and the associated deliveries that go along with that. And that trend was already happening. COVID really advanced it. And while the trend has slowed down a bit again, we're still on that trajectory that more and more of our commerce will be done online, and thus it's delivery travel rather than individuals traveling to do their shopping. Yeah, so a whole bunch of changes. It's still working itself out. It's not entirely clear what's going to persist versus what's finally going to wear off. And then one of the hopes is that biking really got a big boost because of COVID. We may be getting towards a tipping point with biking, and especially the use of e-bikes, which has gotten so popular.
Yeah, and you lead us right into the next question I was going to ask you of now electric bicycles or e-bikes. These are essentially motorized bicycles with electrical motors and rechargeable batteries, which help move the bike when the rider pedals. And I've noticed more people commuting to work or college on e-bikes around Davis over the past few years. And these are, faster than regular bikes and could replace driving for many people who might not have otherwise considered commuting by bicycle. So how do we get more people on e-bikes?
Well, I'm a huge believer in e-bikes as a potentially very big part of our sustainable transportation system. E-bike purchases have taken off. So, as you said, we're seeing a lot more of them around. I see lots of them on the UC Davis campus now, as well as around town in Davis. So, I think it's partly happening. People are choosing e-bikes. They are very practical and they're fun, and some of our research shows this, but there are policies in place and being put in place to help encourage this trend. So there have been a lot of small-scale programs to help subsidize the purchase of e-bikes, especially for lower-income households. Some of this has been done by energy utilities or air quality districts. Some companies have been making e-bikes available to employees through various sorts of programs. The state approved a program, an e-bike incentive program, a couple of years ago, and it looks like it's finally going to launch soon. And we will be studying that to understand who's buying the e-bikes and what this means for how much they're driving. There's supposed to be a federal program as well. Again, it was approved but hasn't yet been funded, so we'll see if that happens.
Yeah, and I mean, one issue that electric car owners talk about is range anxiety, which is a worry that their vehicle will run out of charge mid-use. And Davis has a mild climate that works for biking year-round, and our flat topography means that batteries in e-bikes tend to last longer. However, other cities that have steep areas and longer distances that bicyclists need to navigate on a charge. So, how can city planners address this issue with e-bikes?
Yeah, well, I think obviously e-bikes are going to work better in some places than others, but they have a pretty good range relative to the kind of distances people are willing to bike. I think our e-bike has a range of about 60 miles on a charge, and I'm not likely to ride it 60 miles. But, 10 miles out, 10 miles back is totally comfortable from the standpoint of the battery charge. But they're also easy to charge. You don't need the fancy chargers that you have for cars. You can just plug them into a normal outlet. So what planners need to do is think about some charging stations for e-bikes. And it's the kind of thing transit agencies could help with, like at BART stations. One issue for electric vehicle charging is what about people living in apartment buildings who can't put in their own charger? So the state's looking at policy about requiring apartment buildings to have a certain amount of charging capacity. And, along with that, we could be requiring these kinds of developments to have places to safely park e-bikes because, of course, they're expensive by the standard of bikes. So you want to have safe parking where you can feel confident it's not going to get stolen. And then it'd be easy enough to put charging capability into that safe bike parking area. So I think there's a lot planners can do, both in terms of actually providing the infrastructure, but also requiring private development, to provide the infrastructure.
And lastly, if you could redesign the way that transportation works in Northern California, what would it look like?
Well, I think we're getting there. If I look at how transportation in the Bay Area has changed over the decades that I've been in this field, things have gotten better. We've got more extensive transit systems that are more interconnected. Along with that, we are developing more densely around the transit that we do have. So you look at a lot of the BART stations and Caltrain stations, and we're seeing, higher density development, whether it's office building or apartment buildings around those transit stations. Land use is a really big a part of the solution. We have to have the right land use to make transit work. So I think a lot of that's gotten better. We obviously have a long ways to go. We can look to Europe to say there's a model for how we could be doing things here. They still have a lot of driving there, but not nearly as much as we have. You go to a place like the Netherlands, and it's very easy to get around without a car because at the local scale, you can ride your bike everywhere. And if you need to go longer distances, you ride your bike to the train station. Get on the train, lots of inner city train service that's high quality and high frequency, and it gets you to the next town that you need to go to. So it's investing in all those alternatives, making a very integrated system, and doing the right kind of land use around that system. One thing we haven't talked about that I should also bring up is the question of highway widenings. That's a topic we've been working on a lot in the past couple of years. California is trying to reduce how much people drive in the state, but at the same time, we're still building new highways and we are widening highways. And the research is very conclusive that when you widen a highway, what you do is generate more driving. And we call that the induced travel effect. And it's a very simple economic principle. If you widen the highway, you speed up the traffic, that's like reducing the cost of driving, and people are going to consume more of it until you get back to exactly where you were before, where the freeway is just as congested as ever, but you're carrying more cars and more vehicle miles of travel. So I guess I see that as the really hard challenge in the state. We're making progress on all this other stuff I've been talking about, and the state is really pushing regional agencies and local governments to be doing the right thing. But we have to let go of this idea that the freeways need to be widened.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Time Out Radio today, and great to talk to you.
Very nice to talk to you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's Dr. Susan Handy, who is a professor in the Department of Environmental Science and Policy and the director of the National Center for Sustainable Transportation. And that was Out of My Hands by Arizona. In today's travel segment, we visit the city of Amsterdam, widely considered to be the bicycle capital of the world. It's the capital of the Netherlands and also its biggest city. Its currency is the euro and its official language is Dutch. Amsterdam has more bicycles than people, about 1.2 million bikes, and instead of car horns, you hear bicycle bells ringing all around you. The majority of the city's residents bike every day, and more than a third of all trips in Amsterdam are made by bike. Just be careful to look both ways when crossing the street, and most definitely do not venture into the bicycle lane, or you could collide with a super fast bike rider. The city has 320 miles of bike lanes, and bikes have the right of way over both cars and pedestrians. Amsterdam wasn't always a bike-friendly city. Back in the 1950s and 60s, the number of cars increased steeply, and the number of deaths due to traffic accidents went up, especially among children. Activists worked hard in the 1970s to make the streets safe for children, and the city reclaimed its bicycle-friendly title. These days, you'll find bicycles not just on Amsterdam's roads, but also in its miles of canals. About 25,000 bikes that fall in are fished out from the bottom of its waterways each year. And speaking of canals and waterways, Amsterdam lies below sea level and is built on clay. 11 million wooden poles form its foundation and prevent the city's buildings from sinking into the marshy ground. Not sure I want to invest in a house there. I'll take my chances on a houseboat instead. Amsterdam has more canals than Venice. With over 165 canals, you can take your boat for a 60-mile ride on the water within city limits. Lots of its residents live on houseboats, and there are more than 2,500 houseboats in the city. These floating homes are built on a concrete base, and on the inside look just like a regular house, with living rooms, bedrooms, and bathrooms. The city even has a boat just for cats. The Cat Boat is a shelter for stray cats. Amsterdam has the only floating flower market in the world and has been around since 1862. All its stalls are on boats. When on land, you'll notice that the city has some very narrow and tall houses with 4 or 5 floors. The narrowest house in the city is only about 3 feet wide. Back in the 17th century, people who lived there were taxed based on the width of their house, so they built narrow and tall homes to save money. If you're into museums, this is a great place for you. Amsterdam has the most museums per capita in the world. These include the Van Gogh Museum, Anne Frank House, and the Rijksmuseum. Tired after a day of checking out museums? Take a break for some stroopwafels, thin cookies with a caramel filling, best eaten fresh off the griddle. Or try some Dutch cheese such as Gouda and Edam. For a hearty dinner, head to one of Amsterdam's many Indonesian restaurants that have their roots in the Dutch colonization of Indonesia back in the 17th century. There you can have a Ristafel meal with a parade of dishes that you eat with rice. So that wraps up our journey to our place of the week, the city of Amsterdam. Alright, let's call a timeout for Time Out Radio. This was your host, Rohan Bakshi. You're listening to Kader 95.7 FM, where the grassroots grow. Have a great day, everyone.